words.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning again.
Today we're going to talk about karuna, about compassion. This is the second of the four Brahma-viharas, or sometimes translated as limitless ones, or abodes of the Buddha. The first one that Shinshu talked about last week was Maitri, loving kindness, metta. That's metta, Maitri. The second one that we're going to talk about today is compassion, karuna. And then next week we'll talk about mudita, sympathetic joy, joy in the beneficence of others. And then the last week we'll talk about upekkha, equanimity. So the basis of compassion is metta, is kindness, is caring. It basically is the wish for myself and all beings to be freed from suffering. So it's kind of an extension of caring, right? So there's a basic foundation of kindness, and when you see suffering, then you want that to be alleviated. It's a kind of, it's a natural extension. One of the traditional images from the Theravadin tradition that's used is of a mother and child in these four things. So the first one would be a loving relationship with one's child, a mother or father or parents, aunt, uncle, whatever you want, fill in the blank, loving relationship with the child, fundamental. And then compassion would be if that child were in pain or in danger. You would want that to end. You know, it would be this feeling, I don't want that. Sympathetic joy would be a kind of delight in the child's playing or the child's accomplishments. Right. And equanimity, which I'll talk about in a couple of weeks, would be a stability, a willingness for that child to be who he or she or they are, and to grow and go away when the time comes, you know. So this, I think when we think of this way, in this way, it can help us understand what the basis of each of these is. The sense of these, in particular the sense of Maitri and compassion, is one that is based in, both of these come from a deep sense of our interconnectedness. This is a fundamental teaching of Buddhism, right? That we are all interconnected. In fact, we are so interconnected that we're actually not different from one another in our essence. That if we really look at who we are, we really stop and look at our existence in the world, we will see this inextricably bound intimacy. In Zen, we like the word intimacy a lot. But it's even beyond intimacy, because there's a non-separation, which of course does not mean that we're not individual beings. We are, and we need to remember that. But this sense of boundness together. So in a sense, our job is to return to this interrelatedness, to return and be aware of our interrelatedness. And when we do, our response, according to the Buddhist teachings, is twofold. First, our heart opens to others in a direct and simple way. If you understand someone, you know, have you ever had the experience where maybe someone is bothering you, and then you find out that they just lost their mother, or they just lost their job? And you have an empathy, you have a sense of, oh, I understand, and it changes your whole relationship to whatever they're crankiness is. This is a very simple way of understanding compassion or understanding interrelatedness, is when we see the struggles that we all have, and when we see our utter dependence on one another, our heart naturally opens. The other thing, the other part of this that happens is we experience gratitude. Because when we see our interrelatedness, we see how every breath we take is given to us. The trees are producing oxygen for us to breathe. You know, when we eat something, you know, it's the earth has grown it and somebody picked it and somebody trucked it to us, and unless we grow our own vegetables, you know. So even if we do, the air and the water and the, you know, this is just gratitude becomes abundantly clear to us when we study this way. And gratitude deepens our sense of connection and our supports us to embody kindness in its companion compassion. So it's important to remember that we don't need to manufacture kindness or compassion. This is not something we produce. When we think that way, it's kind of false, isn't it? I'm going to be kind. I'm going to make myself kind. It's like, no. If I'm cranky right now, I'm cranky. I don't need to make myself be anything. But I can look at my own mind and I can use whatever state I'm in, whatever I find there, to kind of follow the breadcrumbs back down to interrelatedness. I don't have to believe, if they, like that bumper sticker says, you don't have to believe everything you think, and you don't have to believe everything that you feel. You just return again and again and again. So there is this sense, according to the teachings, that this is our natural state. Kindness and compassion is our natural state. And there's this image that's sometimes used in Tibetan Buddhism, that it's like there's a spring of water naturally flowing up from the earth. And we don't, you know, there may be some autumn leaves covering the spring, and maybe we need to brush those out of the way. But we don't have to pump the water. It naturally arises when we return to our own sense of who we are. So it's important, because it's so easy when we pose an intention like being compassionate or being kind, that it can become set up as a bludgeon for us, you know. Well, you weren't kind, or you've got to be kind, or you've got to feel this, or it doesn't work that way. You've got to be compassionate. Endlessly compassionate, right? That's just a recipe for suffering. Isn't it? So we can't force an attitude. When we do, we harm ourselves and we harm other people. But we can train ourselves by connecting with the compassion that we already have. It may be very tiny, maybe microscopic in a moment. It may be even invisible to us. When we can't connect with it, what we connect with, and since you talked about this a little bit last week, is we connect with our intention. So if we're in a situation or we're in our lives, we cannot feel compassion. We can connect with my intention. My intention is to express kindness and compassion in this world. And that's an act of kindness to ourselves and others, isn't it? When we, to the extent that we can ground ourselves in this, we can find peace, even in the midst of difficulty. So we recognize our human needs. This is really important. We recognize our human needs. We recognize our limitations. We recognize we're honest with ourselves. We say honesty is the most important thing in the practice of Zazen. Honesty. Not brutality. Honesty. Clear, honest. Yes, this is my own mind at this moment. This is the best that I can see in this moment. So I like to say we set up camp at the edge. We don't go over the cliff in some, you know, kind of thoughtless way. I'm going to, you know, and exhaust ourselves. And we don't pull back from the edge so much that we kind of go to sleep in cluelessness. We set up camp at the edge of our own ability in this moment. So the practice of compassion is not a wimpy practice. Sometimes people say, oh, you know, being nice. One of my teachers talked about the tyranny of niceness. Tyranny of niceness. So this confusion of being nice, being kind, being compassionate, being saintly, not being messy, or this, to be honest and to come back to the discipline of compassion is not wimpy. It takes courage. It takes strength. It takes fortitude, discipline, all of these things. Because our tendencies to be aggressive, to be thoughtless, to be run around by our afflictive emotions, that's part of the human condition, isn't it? Maybe some of you, maybe there's a hidden saint in this room. It's not me. So the beauty of compassion practice is that there's no getting away from it, right? It's kind of like an endless hall of mirrors. You're there, and you can feel this big, fat toad of an obstacle keeping you from feeling compassion. You do not feel compassionate in this moment. You cannot stand this person. You want to smack them. You know? Okay, you know, your mind says, this is not helpful. This is not where I want to live. This does not bring me peace. This is not helpful to the other person. This is the delusion of separateness and aggression. Right? So what does that trigger in you? Compassion. It's like, I know that this is suffering. I know that wanting to smack this person is suffering. It hurts. It hurts me. It hurts them. So I can have compassion for myself, or at least the intention to have compassion for myself. And if I can't remember to have compassion for myself, I have compassion for myself because I can't remember to have compassion for myself. So there's no escape. There's no end to our intention. No matter what is in your mind and heart, it can be the object of practice. So I know this can make us feel a little like, ha, ha, you know what I mean? There's no way to get out of this? No, there's no way to get out of it. So the question then becomes, how do I cultivate a sense of discipline, a sense of returning that's wholesome and healthy and honest? There's a Buddhist scholar named Paula Arai who I've talked about before, and she did this wonderful book called Bringing Zen Home, in which she spent 8 or 10 years interviewing contemporary women, lay women, Buddhist practitioners in Japan. I highly recommend this book. It's all about how to really live a deep life of awakening in ordinary life. And one of the women in the book, Uma Marison, said, "I know that I am healed when I am kind. I know that I am healed when I am kind." So healing in this sense means being really feeling ourselves, experiencing ourselves, knowing ourselves as being a part of reality, part of this interrelated world that we live in. That's what healing is. Then we're free to act and move when we remember the fact of our interrelatedness. That's healing. And when we remember that, kindness is a natural response. So if we see kindness, we experience ourselves in a certain way, don't we? When we actually feel compassion, we experience ourselves in a certain way. I know that I am healed when I am kind. So when we see our reactivity, our crankiness, our selfishness, our delusion, we stop and we say, this is not who I want to be. I want to dig deeper. I want to dig deeper in myself. I want to know, what is my real intention here? What do I really want to live out in my life? And what I want to live out in my life, our basic intention according to the Buddha Dharma, is a kind of honest, clear, vital, compassionate, joyful activity. Right? Doesn't that sound good? So, in a sense, compassion practice helps us dig deeper. Helps us understand the obstacles that we pose to ourselves from living a life of awakening. Makes us tender towards ourselves and others. And this is not sappy, right? This is awake tenderness. The practice, when we see ourselves in this way and we challenge ourselves in this way and we go more deeply in this way, we know our equality with all beings. And this is a very important dimension of compassion practice. In the traditional teachings, they are called near and far enemies of each of these qualities. So the far enemy of compassion is cruelty. So it's the opposite, right? To intentionally harm another being, to act with cruelty, is to act out of thick delusion. And it's the opposite of compassion, right? The near enemy of any of these qualities is something that looks like it, but it's actually its opposite. So, the near enemy of metta might be a kind of sweet, self-satisfied niceness, right? Very ego-driven, very like, I am nice. The near enemy of compassion is pity. In pity, I'm up here and you, poor slob, are down here. Right? It's not a function, it's not equal. It's not we're in this together. I understand what it means to be a deluded human being. I struggle too. We're in this together. That's compassion. Pity is this. So this honesty keeps us grounded in the human condition with others. And we develop a kind of inner stability and calmness and this sense of groundedness. This edge can be very difficult sometimes. I think all of us probably have heard about what happened in Paris last night. Yeah? Okay. Well, if you didn't know, there were 5 separate bombings in Paris at the same time. And many people were killed. One of the bombings and shootings. And one of the shootings was in a theater with the, I think it was about 1,500 people in there. Many people. I don't even know how many people were killed. The last count I heard was 150 people at least. So we think, when we think about compassion, I think it's fairly easy to have compassion for the people who were shot. Right? Ah, you go to the theater one night, you're there, and somebody breaks in with a gun and kills you, or kills your partner, or kills your child. And we are, you know, we can feel how difficult that is, how painful, how scary, how traumatizing, how... Compassion practice asks us to have equal feelings for the shooters, right? And this can be tricky, because we might feel, oh, that, I cannot understand how someone could do that. I don't get it. I don't understand how you could run into a theater and just, people are laying there, just shoot them. How could you do that? It's easy for us to touch a sense of judgment or foreignness or hatred or for someone who would act like that. And one of the only ways that we can actually cultivate genuine compassion is to see ourselves clearly and know that under certain circumstances, every human being is capable of terrible action. You know? And we look honestly at the conditions, the causes and conditions that have created this situation. Poverty, oppression, poverty, oppression, colonialism, all of this, you know? And we really see, oh, this delusion is so thick. To experience a reality in which one thinks that it's acceptable to kill another human being or to kill, to create, to express violence in this way, indicates a level of delusion that is so thick, the opposite end of feeling interconnected, of feeling like we're the same, of feeling. So the reason I say this is tricky is because then we can feel like, oh, well, I'm not that person. Those poor people, they're deluded. Do you see what I mean? So we work with, yes, this is delusion. Yes, this is... a terrible thing. I can't connect in myself with this, with the capacity to wreak that kind of violence. But I do know what it's like to be deluded. I do know what it's like to feel anger. I do know what it's like to feel injustice. So we work towards a sense of equality with everyone involved. Equal compassion, equal sense of connectedness. Do you see what I mean? We make sure that we heal ourselves, connect ourselves into reality in such a way that we're not separate from anyone. This is, this white statue here is Kenon Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva of compassion, she who hears the cries of the world. And just as Shichi last week was talking about rain that falls equally, the Dharma rain falls equally on everyone. Kenon Bodhisattva doesn't hear the cries of just some people or some beings. She hears the cries of the world. That means everyone, equally. This is the sense of the equality that we have. that is the heart of compassion. So this is, Dogen Zenji talks about Daishi magnanimous mind. Well, it's translated as magnanimous mind. Great, Dai is great. And it implies consciousness or a kind of limitlessness, limitless inclusiveness of everyone and everything. It's a positive, transforming state of being. Shin, remember, Dai Shin, great. Shin means heart and mind. It doesn't just mean like what's between your ears. There's a sense of it being noble and courageous and generous and forgiving. So it's this great mind and heart that's inclusive of everyone. So this is this Daishin is the mind of compassion, is the mind of inclusiveness. And there are specific ways, practices that we can use to cultivate this. Last week, Shinshu talked about a particular traditional method of cultivating metta, cultivating kindness. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about a slightly different way of cultivating compassion. This practice is based on these phrases that you may have heard. May all beings be free from suffering, and the root of suffering is the one that was connected. So, may all beings be happy, and may all beings be free from suffering and the root of suffering. So we ask ourselves in the first phrase, what is happiness? What does that mean? Yeah. Happy, happy? I don't think so. It's pointing towards a happiness that's a kind of peace and sense of generosity and aliveness. And the second phrase, may all beings be free from suffering and the root of suffering, we say, what's suffering? And what's the root of suffering? So it's important that we distinguish between pain and suffering, right? We can break a leg and be in pain, but that's not necessarily suffering. Suffering, dukkha, is this unsatisfactoriness. It's dukkha is the image that's used for dukkha is like there's an axle and a wheel. And it's like there's a round hole for the axle to go in, but the axle is square, right? So it's kablunk, 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 kablunk. You know, if you're riding in a cart, that's the way it's going to be. So this unease, unsatisfactoriness, unsettled, this can be extreme, very, very deep suffering, or it can be kind of subtle and just not quite right, like Princess and the Pea kind of thing, you know. The root of suffering, according to the Buddhist teachings, is the sense of isolation, barriers, separateness, not knowing ourselves to be who we are, clinging, defensiveness, delusion. So we break a leg, we have pain, but we create enormous amount of suffering through our fear, our the ways that it challenges our identity, all of these things. When we take up these practices, we take up responsibility for looking at the barriers in our lives to compassion or kindness. So we make the switch from seeing barriers as barriers, difficulties as barriers, and we move towards seeing them as instigators for practice. So I'm feeling this way right now. I'm feeling separated. Okay, I'm going to take up this practice of compassion. I'm going to see how can I cultivate a sense of desire for myself to be free from suffering and all to be free from suffering. When we do this, we we connect with our intention. When we do these practices, we connect with our intention. And when we connect with our intention, we find our home. Because this intention, this sense of, I'm doing this thing, I'm living my life in a certain way. Yes, I'm not perfect. Yes, I may fail. I can say I'm sorry. I can move forward. There's a sense of peace there, isn't there? The sense that you're following the principles that lie at the root of your life the best you can in this moment is empowering. And you see your limitations, and this allows you to deepen your sense of compassion. So we clarify our intention. We thoughtfully place it in the middle of our life. We return to it. We know our own courage, our own energy, our own empathy. We feel ourselves as a part of reality. We come to know ourselves as a person of intention. This is not dependent on how things work out, right? This is about, I want to cultivate these qualities. I want to be awake. I want to generate compassion in this world. That's what I want to contribute, right? What world do I want to live in? So there's a cycle that happens, a kind of connection, when we see, when we open to the suffering of ourselves and others, we break down barriers that separate us, we have greater sensitivity, and our greater sensitivity allows us to feel more connected. So the connection creates sensitivity, empathy, compassion. Empathy, sensitivity, compassion creates connection. It's a kind of positive feedback loop. Right. It's up to us to do what a friend of mine called heavy mental lifting. You know, it's like, she said, I feel like I'm picking up this, like, ton. Like this. So we do, that's what we do. We get very strong. We do that over and over and over again. We cultivate this willingness, we cultivate the sense of responsibility for our own minds and hearts, we cultivate wisdom to see clearly, we understand that we're equals, we move towards the healing that kindness supports, we understand our courage, we take up a certain posture with regards to our lives, that's not one of closing down, but one of opening up. So we see ourselves clearly, we see others as ourselves, we act with that as the basis, we clean up messes when we fail, and we return over and over again to our intention. Pretty simple. Pretty difficult. So what I'd like to do now is do a short meditation with you that's a little different. The first part of this meditation is to take a moment and just remember your interconnectedness as best you can. Ground yourself in your intention. I'm going to tell you about this, and then I'll do it with you for a minute. Ground yourself in your intention. Acknowledge your effort. That this effort is, I'm making an aside here. In the Tibetan tradition, there is this distinction between absolute and relative bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is the mind of awakening. Absolute bodhicitta is the mind of awakening in the sense of our interconnectedness, things just as they are. Relative bodhicitta is the specific things we can do to cultivate compassion, loving kindness. Does this make sense to you? Specific things. So when we start a practice like this, we remember our interconnectedness. We remember absolute bodhicitta. We remember that the mind of awakening is present at all times, everywhere. We may not feel it, we may not experience it, but it's there. The next step is to remember or call to mind something that actually evokes a feeling of compassion. So you might think of the people who are struggling today in Paris with their wounds or their rage or their grief. Or perhaps there's someone in your life that's struggling with an illness or just lost their pet or whatever. So something that actually, this is part that's different from what Shinshu was talking about last week, something that actually evokes the emotional component of this, the heart component of this, the sense of compassion and care. And you allow yourself to actually experience that for a moment. Then you extend that feeling towards yourself, first of all. Now, this is difficult for some people. If it's difficult for you to extend it to yourself, flip the next two steps. Because the step after yourself is a step of somebody that you care for very much. So sometimes it's easier to have a sense of compassion for somebody that you care for very much than it is for yourself. So you want to, like, not stop the process. So the idea is that you start with this absolute bodhicitta. You call to mind something that evokes this feeling. You extend it to yourself. Then you extend it to someone that you care about, then to a good friend, someone close to you, then to somebody that's neutral. You know, say grocery store clerk or somebody at the post office or somebody you pass on the street as you go to work, somebody that's neutral. Then to a difficult person, somebody who really gets your goat or has harmed you in some way. Don't push yourself. Don't pick somebody that is beyond your capacity. Right? You want to stay close to the edge. You don't want to push yourself over the edge, and you don't want to. You want to ride the edge there. Then to all five of these people, including yourself, and then to all beings throughout the entire universe. So is this clear? This practice clear? Okay, so I'd like you to get comfortable. The other thing is that as we go through this, if you feel that you've lost the emotional component, and it doesn't have to be a deep emotion, you know, we're not, it can be just a kind of wisp or gentle thread of the emotional component. If you feel that you've lost it, go back to the image or go back to the person that you really feel compassion for, or go back, you know, so that you want to actually stay with this emotional component. Okay. So, I would like you to just breathe in for a moment and recall the feelings, the teachings, the knowledge that we and all beings are absolutely interdependent. That a luminous, awakened mind, the realization of that is our true nature. Utterly trustworthy. Now I'd like you to recall some image, event, person in which compassion naturally arises. May they be free from suffering. May they be free from suffering. Emotional feeling of freedom from suffering, the wish, the experience. Perhaps someone helped you to be free from suffering. A grounded in that feeling and with those thoughts, in the posture of compassion, extend compassion to yourself. May I be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May I find ease. May my suffering melt away. And nourish the ground of awakening. Now Now call to mind someone for whom you feel genuine compassion, genuine deep compassion. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May their suffering melt away. And now call to mind a good friend, someone that you care about. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May their suffering and trials and tribulations melt away. And now bring to mind a neutral person, a specific person that you probably don't know well. You don't know their life or their struggles, but you know they're a human being. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. And now bring to mind a difficult person. And remember, stay connected to the emotional content as well as the thoughts. Bring to mind someone for whom it's possible for you to say, may they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. Stretch yourself a little bit. May their difficulties and tribulations and suffering and angst melt away. And now bring to mind all of these beings, all of these people. May they all equally be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May their obstructions to wisdom and compassion and full life melt away. Now extend this wish to all beings in this room, in this town, in this state, this continent, across the oceans and in the oceans, under the earth, in the air. Beyond space and time, may all beings be free from suffering and the root of suffering. Now I'd like to return to your sense of your own awakened nature in gratitude that you have the capacity to do this practice and acknowledgement of your own interconnected, luminous, true nature.